I do a lot of work with executive leadership teams. And, you know, one of the big problems that pretty much every business is seeing right now is they're feeling cultural conflict between executive leadership, who is historically older and in kind of a command and control style, and then millennial workers. They respond completely different. And there's really some pretty common reasons for that breakdown. Instead of understanding that and adjusting and speaking in a way, it's like there's a lot of times I'll open a session with executives, like very senior level executives, and I'll say, did you know that you are not always perceived as you intend? Not tell you the number of light bulbs that go off when I say that. It's like, oh, well, that explains so much. Yeah, it really does. So let's start bridging the gap. Let's give you some tools. Let's equip you, because it's not anybody else's problem. Like, you are executive management. This is your problem to solve, and you can, and this is how you do it, right? And then all of a sudden, all the skepticism goes away.
This is the Angles of Latitude podcast, session number 105 with people reader and host of the People Reading podcast, Lisa Mitchell.
This is squadron leader confirming hostiles inbound. Prepare for battle.
What you're about to hear is the integration of life.
Clarity is power.
If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right.
Liberty.
We choose to go to the moon.
It's happening.
And all things geek.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know how to answer that.
You got a badass over here.
Welcome to the Angles of Latitude podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome to this week's show. I'm your host, JC Preston, founder of New Inceptions, a website dedicated in helping people find their own personal freedom. And of course, this is the show which has been released each Thursday, where we bring you life lessons or a message from successful entrepreneurs, experts, and artists to help you do the life's work and live a lifestyle that you're proud of. Hope you're having a great day on your side of the web, wherever you're at. You might be listening to me on your way to your job, and or your way out of your job, or, you know, mowing your yard. You can still mow your yard at this time of year, but anyway, thank you for listening in today, and I have a lot of stuff to cover. One of the things that I wanted to get to, speaking of changes, is that I'll be announcing something at the end of the show that you guys might want to know about. As you might have seen in the AOL networking group, I've decided to go a different route than that particular group, and you know, I have a few things that I want to try in a new group, and you know, I hope that you guys can come along for the ride. If you want to know more about it, again, stay tuned afterwards, but just make sure that you like the New Inceptions page, because that's where I'm going to be letting people formally know when the new one is posted. So that said, in the session, Albert joins me as we talk with a new friend of ours via Amplify Indie and Ascension. And Elisa Mitchell is her name, and she is all about helping people learn about conveying themselves in a proper physical manner. Now, you might be wondering, why is this important? Well, unless you're blind, like recent guest Isaac Lidsky, body language is a huge part of how we engage with those around us. And in his interview, you know, he mentioned that his communication with others, he's had to help his employees actually hone in on how they communicate with him, because he can't see body language. So, you know, it's just so foreign to many of us that, you know, the way that we move our bodies when we're speaking or simply standing really does change the perception of, you know, how others interpret us. And many times, because we're not aware, it tends to hurt us. And so as you'll learn in the conversation today, there are going to be three parts of nonverbal communication. We actually dive down into what they are. And we also talk about how you can improve them. We also discussed how you can go, you know, be more aware of what's called your decoding process and what that's all about. And then we also go into how millennials are having to deal with unique struggles in both their professional and romantic lives. And then finally, we get into how to make good impressions when it comes to meeting people. Now, This session is powered by our friends over at Read It For Me. And, you know, the thing is that time and time again, we hear the phrase, leaders are readers, right? Sure, you can listen to audiobooks, but you might miss out on key parts if you're not paying attention. So really, with all the things that you have to do on a day-to-day basis, how has your reading schedule been? Have you had time to get through all those books that you've wanted to get through? And for me, I've actually had to say that Sunday is my reading day, and now that's going to be conflicting with the NFL schedule, and now perhaps totally hit the fan. So when are you getting in your reading? If you are, great. You know, if you're getting to read all the books that you want to read, great. You know, maybe you're not. And if you're not, don't feel bad, because for the most part, as I was saying, I'm right there with you. But, you know, that's changing because of, you know, this awesome service that I've been telling you guys about called Read It For Me. And, you know, Read It For Me is the number one book summary service for entrepreneurs, executives, and those that want to be one someday. And if you're like me and you hear about all these great books that are being released all the time, but you find yourself with limited time to read them, service is definitely for you. And, you know, having started as a way of helping blogs build traffic, you know, it has grown to be a vast library of business and success book summaries. And, you know, these summaries, they're not just available in video. You know, you can listen to them or you can read them through text. I mean, these things are so well put together that they can be used as part of presentations if you want to use them that way. If you have clients that you want to, you know, give them more thorough break or quick summaries of different books that you might be using, I mean, these presentations are already there for you. So some of their customers include corporations like Zappos, American Express, RBC Royal Bank. And as I was saying, on top of doing presentations with clients, you know, if you're a coach, want to build better relationships with them, this is also a perfect tool for you as well. By going to newinceptions.com/readitforme, you can get your free membership today. Normally valued at $10 a month, this membership provides you with text summaries daily so you can learn while you're on the go. So get started today again for free at newinceptions.com/readitforme, and I'm sure you're going to be using it as much as I do. So that being said, let's get on with the chat with Lisa Mitchell. Show notes and show note extras can be found at newinceptions.com/105. And of course, I'll be on after the show to fill you in on anything we might have missed. Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. JC and Albert here. And today we have another local indie-based entrepreneur. Albert and I are both involved with several organizations here in town, one of which is called Amplify. And I like to think of Amplify, especially the Council of 100 meetings that we've been going to pretty regularly, as a large mastermind of local entrepreneurs. And it's where, you know, we met recent guest Jeremy Miller. And it's also where we've been able to meet today's guest, Lisa Mitchell. And if you're from Indy, you might know of her through her appearances on Indy Style. Or if you're not local, she's been featured in other media sources throughout the web. And just so you can get a taste of what we're going to be talking about today, Lisa is all about body language. Specifically, she teaches folks proven nonverbal techniques so that they can instantly become more confident and charismatic in any situation, be heard, seen, and valued in any environment, and to clearly set expectations and negotiate in a powerful way to achieve their desired outcomes. Or, as I like to personally say, she helps people become less awkward in social situations. So without further delay, let's get going. How are you doing today, Lisa?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me on.
Total pleasure, and been looking forward to having you on the show for quite a while now. So let's get going here. How you doing, Al, by the way?
Doing good. Thanks for leaving me out.
Yeah. But,
yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, Al.
Yeah. But yeah, no, the reason I wanted to have you on today's show with Al is you know, he has a pretty big interest in neuroscience. And I feel that a large part of body language is understanding other people's perceptions of, you know, what's going on with the world, and especially their own social interactions and, you know, just the things that are going on in their mind as they're conversing with people throughout the day. Well, not all random, but you know, you get the idea.
Right.
Back in 2006, let's just kind of start at the beginning. Back in 2006, you were the owner of a coffee house, and today you're now the people reader. How did you How did you go from one to the other?
Well, so in 2006, I actually was the proprietor and owner of what came to become four different coffee house locations, and I was in corporate operations for a media company at the same time.
Wow.
Because I don't really like to just kind of do something. I like to do like a lot of things, because why wouldn't I, right?
Right.
Yeah. And I had a one-year-old and a husband who kind of wanted some attention sometimes. So 2006 was a year of great opportunity and several bad decisions, as far as in relationship to what was realistic for the capacity that I had just as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a very ambitious year, and it was super fun. It was an instance where I got to take a business plan that I had made in a master's program and actually take it to the market and farm it out, and people gave me money for it. So.
Nice.
Yeah, I know, right?
It's a good thing, huh?
Sure. It's fun, but it was very much a traditional kind of brick and mortar business plan, you know, traditional lending, SBA loans, all of that stuff. Totally different from startup, you know, from the startup mentality and process, but you don't know what you don't know. And So I kind of did the traditional brick and mortar ownership, and it was great. We got lots of yeses. We had lots of people that wanted to invite us into their space. And we said yes way too often. We did not vet our yeses carefully enough. And that seems kind of like counterintuitive to think that you have to vet a yes to make sure it's the right yes. But not every yes is the right one for your business. So we kind of let opportunity guide our business plan instead of our business plan guide opportunity. Major lesson learned. Like, if you aren't disciplined, if you're not running the ship, other people will run it for you. And it's always people who don't have skin in the game, right? Everybody's like, oh, you should do this and come do that. But I'm not going to give you the money for that. But you assume all the risk, but we think it's a great idea. And so at the time, not really necessarily knowing better. And I have a master's in management. I have an undergrad in business admin. Traditionally, you know, schooled education, I should have known better. But when you're in it and you're wanting to grow and you're wanting to scale, and you get excited, you know, and you lose perspective because you're so far into it. And you, like, I literally bet the farm on it. So it had to work, right? Because it's like, I got to keep going, because if I do this, then maybe it'll be more profitable. Or it was just total lack of perspective. It was throwing good money after bad. And, you know, I went down with the ship for sure. It resulted in, oh God, all sorts of bad stuff. So I ended up closing my locations, getting divorced, filing for bankruptcy. When you talk about hitting bottom, I have hit bottom. And it's funny, because I hit bottom because I got too many yeses.
Wow. Well, I was talking with someone all right. So the guy that plays Fez on that 70s show, and who is now on NCIS, I forget exactly what his name is.
It's Wilmer.
Wilmer. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So Wilmer.
He just did the School of Greatness podcast with Lewis Howes recently.
Okay. Yeah. Right. And so in that podcast then talks about how he was trying to, you know, be more of him, be bigger and better at himself. And one of the things that he was talking with, and this is a great story, he was talking with Johnny Depp, and Johnny basically said that if you're trying to make life a sprint, then you're never going to get out alive. Whereas if you let the parts and the roles come to you based on what you're wanting to do, then it's more of a marathon. And then that's how you're actually going to be more successful in your career. And it sounds like you were kind of struggling with that a bit at that point.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It was all about, I am not a half-assed kind of person. Sorry, I don't know if I can say that. But I'm just not. I'm not wired that way. I'm very like, once I'm in and when I'm lasered in on something, man, like come hell or high water, it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And part of that is ego driven because nobody likes to fail. Nobody wants to ask for help. Nobody, you know, I did not have the right people around me during that period. All I had around me were people who thought I was amazing and that what I was doing was great. Right. I didn't have anybody that challenged me and said, hey, you know, have you really thought about what exactly that might look like if you take on another $100,000 of debt? Mm-hmm. Have you ever thought about what your schedule, what your daily, you know, day-to-day life is going to feel like if you have four locations mm-hmm. spread across the city mm-hmm, that yeah. you're in charge of? Like, you have a daughter at home, you have a husband who might want to see you once in a while. Like, have you thought about maybe what it's going to be like when you're open from 5 a.m. to 11 p.m. at night? And
yeah.
locations. Like I didn't really have anybody to challenge me back. And I'm not using that as an excuse. I just now in retrospect, having the opportunity to help provide challenge back to entrepreneurs and startup founders. And I just really am super passionate now about being that voice of challenge, even if it's difficult, mm-hmm. because I don't want, if there's anything I got out of my experience, it was that you need to be challenged. Mm. You need to be challenged enough and specifically where you say, okay, let's say you get every yes you're looking for, right? And you guys are both business builders and entrepreneurs and you know this, but if you haven't yet, I challenge you now to take a moment and think about if I get every yes for every ask that I have right now, is that a day I want to live every day? Like break it down by hour. Like seriously, map it out by hour. What will my day look like if I get every yes I'm seeking? And is that a day I'm excited to repeat every single day? And if the answer is no, adjust now.
Yeah.
Wow.
Save yourself. Like that. Yeah. And I say that out of love and I say that out with all seriousness because I had someone challenged me that way and I could have seen, okay, this is how my life will look and this is how little freedom I have and this is how little control I have and I can never go home to visit my family again because I cannot leave the immediate 20-mile radius for more than 4 hours at a time, ever. Mm-hmm. Is that a life you want to live? Do you want to have a nanny in your house for 12 to 14 hours a day because you're busy working a corporate job and running four locations and not be with your daughter ever or only see her if she's in the shop with you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? Like these are the things yeah. Nobody has this conversation with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you wake up one day and that's your life. And guess what? You're $250,000 invested into it. And what? Now what are you going to do?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and in your case, as you said, you filed for bankruptcy because what else were you going to do?
Right. My house was in it. My everything I owned of any value in the world was leveraged against this business.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Wow.
Eventually, you made that decision to go a different route and I'm kind of curious as to how did you feel that you wanted to start working again on, you know, body language out of, it sounds like to me, you know, you're made out of someone with a ton of different interests. Why this particular niche and when was that? What was that aha moment like when you was like, that's it. That's what I want to help people with.
Yeah, that's a great question. So after the year of devastation, that's what I call, because the empire really started crumbling the tail end of 2008. So 2009 was basically like complete wreckage. Like that was basically the wrecking ball coming into my life and changing everything. And then 2010 was a year of paying attorneys, because I've had to pay attorneys for all sorts of shit that year.
Oh, yeah.
And then at that point, my feelings were really, really hurt by life. And I took my ball and went home, right? Like I hauled up with my I sought the shelter of my corporate gig, my autopilot corporate gig, my safe haven. And I'm like, I am screw entrepreneurship. I am done. Mm-hmm. Like, no, thank you. And then, of course, then the conviction sets in on your heart as you're doing this mindless work for a corporation that doesn't really have any greater purpose in the world. And that conviction for me was like, no, you're meant for more.
Yeah.
You are not helping. You, who are you helping at the end of your day? And I'm just like, oh, stop, shut up, right? I don't want to do this. But the conviction grew and I got really heavy into really trying to develop myself. So podcasts, books, just reading everything from people who had been in the trenches and come back out. Like, who's doing it well? Who's gone through transition? How can I learn? What skills can I adapt? I dove headfirst into it and took the leap at the end of 2014 to leave my corporate job and walked into thin air, basically, just knowing I was meant to do a thing. I didn't know what it was yet, but it was something I needed to pursue. And I got actually, kind of serendipitously, I got connected with a founder, company founder, and he was launching a new product and he needed someone to run his other company, which was all about educating entrepreneurs. Mm. Thanks, universe. I see you. and so through that, part of my responsibility with that was providing support and coaching and tools to people that thought they wanted to be entrepreneurs or wanted to be specifically in the tech startup space. What does it feel like? What does your day look like? What's the terminology? How do you get money? How do you build a team? Right. And for me, it was like learning a foreign language because I had only known the traditional brick and mortar route.
Right.
And so I got indoctrinated into that startup culture very, very quickly. And one of my learning moments that really opened my eyes to the impact of body language and nonverbal science was I had to sit through thousands of pitches.
Yeah, I bet.
Really?
Yeah. Right.
I did. Yeah. And there was one event here in Indianapolis in particular when I was really researching and learning the science that they had the format was, it was Innovation Showcase. And that year they had it rapid fire, 60-second pitches. Yeah. And so I was there just for observation basically. And that moment, I had a real moment of sadness as I was listening to some of them because I was familiar with several of the companies and their products and, very strong belief in the world changing, life changing impact of their technology and their products if they could get it to market. Mm-hmm. And it was such a miss and such a missed opportunity when they would get up there. And granted, 60 seconds and a pitch to 1,000 people is nerve-wracking. It's very nerve-wracking. I have the greatest respect for anybody who gets on that stage. But it was such a missed opportunity to know that they're brilliant and know that their product is amazing and then see them not be able to communicate in a way that's confident enough or creates enough influence to just get invited into that next conversation with an investor or with a potential teammate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that became my mission. I'm like, okay, I clearly see it now. And I'm all about instant gratification. I want the quick fix. If it's hard or technical, I don't want to do it. And body language was something that was already on my radar that I was already studying. But then I'm like, okay, I'm going to commit to this because this is the hack. Mm-hmm. This is the entrepreneur hack that can be a game changer for these companies. So I went full-fledged and got certified. I worked with the Human Behavior Research Lab out of Oregon and got certified through a team called the Science of People, led by Vanessa Van Edwards, and really dug deep into the science. And then more importantly, started mapping out applications or, you know, algorithms basically of how do I translate the science into actionable steps for entrepreneurs that win them the right to get in that next conversation.
Mm. Was that event at the first one at Developer House or Developer Town?
No, it was at Dallara.
Oh, okay.
It was at the IndyCar.
Gotcha.
Factory. Yep.
Yeah, I one of the few, I think I went to two of them over the years, early ones, and I think the first one was at Developer Town, and that was so cool that they were finally doing things like that here in town. So.
Yeah, I mean the one, and I've gone to several of them. I think it was at Dallara IndyCar Factory 2 years, and the one I went to had over 1,000 people. A lot of them were, you know, big name VCs, investors, not just from Indianapolis, but kind of from the region. Mm-hmm. And then there was a ton of students there. They bused kids in from Purdue and IU, and it was just like this really amazing opportunity to get. To fill in some gaps for these companies and these entrepreneurs, but man, 60 seconds is a—it's nothing. It's
a nightmare.
It's horrible. And now I think with the inception of NX3 and changing the format a little bit and giving a 13, I think, to 15 minute pitch window is much more comprehensive and gives you a much better shot, but you still got to show up confident. You still got to know how to create, you know, intrigue and influence. You still have to be charismatic because people want to do business with people that they like. Mm-hmm. And if you can't be likable during your first impression, you're already working against yourself.
Which is a perfect segue into our next segment here, which is about first impressions. And when it comes down to it, there are so many people that are out there that have really no idea of, and it's just sad. I mean, it just seems to me that it's one of those things that's like talked about all the time is, you know, make sure you always set a good first impression. And my wife, who's in HR, you know, she's been slowly helping me with my own over the last couple of years that we've been married and how I engage with folks right off the bat. And, you know, I've just started to realize how important it is from the get-go. And honestly, she's been really nice about it because I've been personally pretty stubborn and I will continue to be, you know, many things until I'm eventually like, oh, well, you know, she's right. But I have to say this. I mean, I know that it's not polite to judge books by its covers, but seriously, that's just today's society. I mean, with, what is it, 7 seconds of attention, I think, or is it, I forget which one's the goldfish and which one's actual people, that the goldfish actually has more of an attention span than we do anymore. It's kind of frightening. But
yeah,
how can someone manage, you know, their first impression a bit more so that they're not getting laughed at by potential employers or dates?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. First impressions start so quickly. Science tells us that people within the first 7 seconds of seeing you start to form some pretty major conclusions about you. Mm-hmm. And so this, think about, where are you first seen? People always think, oh, well, when I walk in the room or when I take the stage. But no, it's when you come into their awareness. And I'm going to use the Innovation Showcase example again, because one of my major observations that I saw from that day was how many people were blowing their first impression opportunity. And it was because of the format. So they had one person on stage, somebody on deck, and then everybody else, or at least like in two different sections, was lined up on the side of the room. And they thought, right? And we could all see them. All 1,000 of us sitting in the audience could look to our left and we could see them. And people forgot. Like they were, you could read so much of those people by who was like furiously flipping through note cards or pitch decks and who was like just kind of screwing around looking like they didn't have a care in a world. And, you know, who was just being anything but professional and it's looking like they're going to throw up. Right. So it's the thing that they forgot is that they don't have a cloak of invisibility, right? Like all see you. And so for some people, before they even walked on stage, potential investors, potential team members, resources that could have helped them had already made their decision that they weren't interested. Mm. Because your first impression starts the moment that you're seen. So is it in the parking lot? Is it in the reception area? Is it in the bathroom? Is it, you know, where are you making your first impression? Because it's not always as strategic as you think it is. So it's really about being on before you're on. Like pretty much from the time you pull up in a spot where there's some sort of interaction or some sort of impression you could made, you need to be on. It's not enough to flip a switch before you open your mouth. By then it's too late.
Gotcha.
And people are deciding some pretty important things about you in that 7 seconds. They're deciding if they have a favorable impression of you, if you're a friend or someone that they like. They're deciding if they need to put their guard up, if you could be a potential threat. If they need to kind of kick in or ramp up that freeze, fight, flight instinct. Or worst of all, they don't really know you're there. You're kind of gray space.
Yeah.
They're neutral. And it's really hard. I always argue that I would much rather be perceived as a potential threat or someone that they don't like and win them over than to like not even be relevant enough to be in their awareness.
Yeah. exactly.
You know, especially in an environment where you're making a pitch, where you're asking for dollars or trying to build a team, right? You've got to be on the radar. Gray space is not an option.
Right. Right. Well, and that kind of leads me into my next question is just that, you know, I'll kind of give you her situation is that she's very, like Al, she has a background in the military and she's, when her dress style is like very impactful, like always makes a statement because it's always like no wrinkles, no, a very uniform-esque type of thing going on. And, you know, she does her hair to match that. And I got to add, I mean, is there something that you could say is like being too prepped? Because like with her, you know, there are days when she doesn't get her hair quite like completely, I don't want to say ironed out because it's like, it's when you have like a whole bunch of hairspray and you just do it up in the back and it's just like, you know, it's just, again, it's what they do in the military and that's what she's used to. But then there's other days where it's more artistic and, you know, it just, she just comes across being more of her own personality versus, you know, I honestly see it as a facade that she puts up at work. So is there a way that, you know, people can actually balance that out a little bit more? Or because it just seems to me that there's people that are not prepared, as you were just talking about with a showcase, versus people that are just too maybe fake or not exactly who they are.
Exactly. We'll kind of back up for a minute and talk about the three parts of nonverbal communication. So when people think nonverbal communication, they think, oh, body language. Mm-hmm. And yes, body language is one of those three parts. But then you also have a category called facial expressions, which includes micro expressions and longer held, prolonged, you know, kind of facial components that convey messages. And then you also have a third category called ornaments. And ornaments is, in the way I correlate it is, okay, think of yourself as a Christmas tree, an empty Christmas tree, and ornaments is everything that you put on yourself that could convey a message. So that's clothing, hair, makeup, tattoos, facial hair, accessories, what you carry with you. You know, it's all of those things that you surround yourself that people are drawing meaning from in your physical space. And so one of the things that really is important when you're looking at the subcategory of ornaments is being contextually appropriate. So is how you're showing up appropriate for the context in which you're operating in? So when you know your outcome, if your outcome is to be professional and you're walking into a financial services firm or a CPA firm, that coming off as professional in that is going to look very different than coming off as professional in a startup environment, right? Like the startup that I worked with, the dress code was literally flip-flops and khakis, like khaki shorts. If I wore real shoes to the office, because I would fly in to help on some things occasionally in DC, like I had to pack flip-flops or sandals, because for me, if I came in, I instantly was red because of my ornaments. As an outsider or as someone who was not part of that culture. So it has to be contextually appropriate. And then the other piece of it is that it has to be authentic. Mm-hmm. So you have people that play dress up and you have people that play dress down. And neither one of those, if it's contrary to what you actually are authentically as your personal style or your personal brand, it really just smacks inauthentic. Which then has people trust you less and question your credibility and wonder, okay, well, what else is mismatched with this person, right? Yeah. So it's operating in a way that's contextually or environmentally appropriate for the situation, but also in a way that honors what's authentic to you. Because if there's a mismatch there, like your biggest enemy in first impressions is having incongruencies. If people are reading mismatches in your behavior versus your words or in your style versus your resume or whatever they're comparing, if there's incongruency there, that breeds distrust. And it sets you up for a much harder transaction than it needs to be.
Right. Well, and it's funny that you should even bring that up, because one of the things that, you know, especially with all the live video that's out there these days, I mean, doing live video is completely different than saying that you're putting a course together, for example, because with live, you don't want to necessarily dress up for it, because the advice that's out there says that you want to be the authentic self when you're doing live video, versus if you're, you know, actually doing a course, then you want to, you know, look not to the nines necessarily, but better suited.
People want to see, people want to know you're credible and that you're competent. And then once they know that, they want to see the man or woman behind the curtain.
Right.
Yeah.
They don't want shiny plastic. They don't want overproduced. They don't want overstaged or scripted. They want to see you kind of in your dorky, goofy, messy, normal self, because then they can say, hey, me too.
And which is perfect, because I was, another podcast that I was just listening to over the weekend was with Brendan Burchard, and he has a new podcast. And I don't know if you've ever listened to his original one, which was The Charmed Life, but he's now changed his format, and he even spends a long time explaining why he's changing it. And now he's actually kind of putting his lessons into a story of his life as the podcast now, which is kind of cool coming from him, because I don't know if you're familiar with his work, but everything that he's ever taught seems very like you're getting the best of him, but you really don't know who he is behind the scenes. And he already talks about, you know, his wife and other people that are around him, which he's never really done before. And that.
So. Yeah. I think the market now demands authenticity of its experts. Like, it's not enough to just be really, really credible. You have to be likable, and you have to be a little dorky, and you have to be vulnerable. Like, you have to let the people in to the not shiny, not so perfect parts of yourself if you're going to gain trust. Because the market has been inundated with overproduced, overly plastic, overly perfect people for so long. And now, I mean, you look at the influencers, and you look at the thought leaders, and you look at who's taking over YouTube, and you know, who the Instagram influences are, and it's the flaws in all people. Mm-hmm. It's the people that let it, when something crashes and burns, guess what? You get a first person point of view to that. And that's freaking awesome.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
I
work with a media and PR agency out in New York. And one of the most painful things for me to adapt to is first of all, fear of being like not being liked, because I'm very much like, I want to be liked. And the other one is living out loud, like unapologetically, and inviting people in, even knowing there's going to be haters, and even knowing that there's people that are vicious. It's like, you know, for instance, I did an Instagram story, which was one of the things I've really ramped up lately, just because it is a great snapshot into the dorky, goofy, not so perfect parts of life. Yeah. And I did one in the morning where I was at this beautiful ballroom at Notre Dame, at the Morrison, training this huge group of people and having all of this, you know, kind of dynamic interaction. And I got like no DM, no engagement. Lots of people watched it. Nobody asked me anything about it. Later that day, I go to the float tank. I go to a place to float in downtown Indy, which, you know, which basically is sitting in a giant pool of salt water and floating around weightless for an hour. I got like 30 direct messages about that. Like, that's what people wanted to know about.
Yeah. Like,
okay. I mean, whatever. And so I think part of what I'm getting over myself about is that I don't always have to be the expert. I don't always have to be teaching or training. I got to show up real though. Like I gotta go flaws and all and gain, because that's how you gain trust. That's how you gain likability. That's how you increase your charisma. Is injecting that warmth and those stories and the man or woman behind the curtain. Like, that's who people want to connect with and be friends with. That's who people will schedule into their day, right? Like, we don't schedule infomercials into our day, but we'll schedule friends. We'll schedule friends, right? Because it's the relationship building part.
Yeah, we'll take this past the first impression. So in your world, it's what, language decoding and decoding body language and things like that. So talk to us about the whole decoding process and how somebody does go from a first impression into a deeper, more genuine relationship?
Yeah, I think there's kind of a natural transition if it's done well. And the easiest way to create relationship now is by realizing the impact of what's happening on the other side of your face. So I always train these skills kind of in a playbook methodology. I'm a big, you know, football dork, and I think the translating from sports terminology works well here, because I train offense, which is how you show up in a room, how you manage yourself, your self-awareness, understanding how you're perceived scientifically by other people. And then I teach defense, which is decoding what's happening on the other side of your face. And so that's really your awareness, because so many times we enter into conversations or interactions and we totally forget that there's like the other person and that they're playing an active role. And that's such a huge missed opportunity. We're so busy managing ourselves and thinking about what we're going to say next, or where we, you know, what outcome we want, or whatever, which is all important. Right. But then we forget that, hey, you know what? If I'm going to really show up in this interaction and help that person feel seen, heard, and valued, I got to clue in.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And I have to not only observe, but then I have to understand what I'm seeing and what it means. And then I have to respond thoughtfully and with empathy and strategically.
So how does the layman out there who does these things, how do they become a better decoder within themselves?
Yeah, it's really less complicated than most people think. And the way I usually train it, if I'm doing a corporate training or a speaking kind of format, is I walk people through four key areas of that they can look at with the person across from them or the people across from them and get really strong clues. So there's overall level of confidence. So how does somebody, what posture does somebody take? How do they sit? How do they stand? How much space do they claim? Mm-hmm. What does that tell you about their state of mind when they're entering an interaction? We look at what the eyes tell us. So not only eye contact and what that means, but also there's gazing patterns that tell us how people perceive us, what level of respect they have, how much closeness they have towards us, if their intentions are romantic or different maybe than what you're expecting. We talk about hands and building trust and creating oxytocin and how you can use hands to move in an erection forward much more quickly and productively, and the perfect handshake formula, how not to offend, how to decode somebody else's handshake that they're giving to you.
Yeah.
And then we go down, just kind of continue down the body quickly on what the feet and legs tell us. They're the most honest part of our body, and they tell us all sorts of things. They tell us where somebody really wants to be. They tell us when they're ready to engage further or leave a conversation. They can even give clues in a group environment to who actually holds the power dynamic in a room. So it's really, none of it is super complex or complicated. It's just building an awareness and then being really intentional about looking. People tell you everything you need to know. But you need to know what the message is telling you, and then you need to figure out what to do with that to leverage that towards your outcome.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, and it's just, you know, one of the things that I, for the longest time, you know, growing up, I think that so many people are focused on what do other people think of me? What do other people think of me? What do other people think of me? But then as they're preparing their message to, you know, say it and then get it out there, they're so focused on that offense and preparing that they're not strategically kind of seeing what's going on during the game, if we were to keep using that analogy, that they're not actively, you know, changing their defense based on
what they don't have anybody in the booth, right? Yeah. Like there's nobody. Right. There's nobody watching the defense lineup. There's just nobody that input. You're not giving yourself the gift of and the tool of having that input if you're not cluing in.
Right. And so it's just, and that for me, like, I don't know. I mean, I think I flipped the switch, and it was, I think so many people are, I might have flipped the switch like in college, as late as college, because I had no idea that you had to be paying attention to perception as well as what you were trying to say. And to me, it just seems like one of those things that so many people don't even pay attention to. It's like they want to get their point across, but they're not necessarily seeing how someone else is receiving that point.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's a lot of the work that I do. I do a lot of work with executive leadership teams. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the big problems that pretty much every business is seeing right now is they're feeling cultural conflict mm-hmm. between executive leadership, who is historically older and in kind of a command and control style, and then millennial workers, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
And they respond completely different. And there's really some pretty common reasons for that breakdown. But mm-hmm. it instead of understanding that and adjusting and speaking in a way, it's like there's a lot of times I'll open a session with executives, like very senior level executives, and I'll say, did you know that you are not always perceived as you intend?
I bet that gets their attention.
Right? But I cannot tell you the number of light bulbs that go mm-hmm. off when I say that. It's like, oh, well, that explains so much. It's like, yeah, it really does. So let's start bridging the gap. Let's give you some tools. Let's equip you, because it's not anybody else's problem. Like, you are executive management. This is your problem to solve, and you can, and this is how you do it, right? And then all of a sudden, all the skepticism goes away.
Yeah.
What kind of trend? I think that's a great topic to dive deeper into at this point, that there's so many gaps out there, age gap, gender gap, whatever you want to call it, the millennial gap there. What trends have you seen in your experience and from your expertise with that between millennials and corporate?
Yeah, well, there's several. I work with a company, a large utility company, and they have their executive management team is wonderful, and they're a lot of them are kind of legacy workers, so they've had dads or grandpas mm-hmm. that work there, and they've come up from linemen into executive management over the course of their careers. And one of the difficulties that they've expressed is that the workforce that is coming in, the skilled workforce that's coming in now, first of all, there's just not many of them, mm-hmm. right? Because skilled trades, everyone's being shoved into college, whether it's a good fit or not. And skilled trades, they're just not getting the opportunity, you know, to be explored like they should be, in my opinion.
Sure. Yeah.
And then also when they do get them, the mentality and it is so different with those workers that they can't just do what they've always done. And the workforce, the days of saying, all right, well, you're going here and you're being here and you're living out of a hotel and this is your schedule. And oh, by the way, now we're going to send you here. Like that order giving structure. And I'm not saying that that's the only way they manage, but that past has been primarily how that has worked. And so now there's fierce competition for skilled workers, and it's not just about money. Mm-hmm. You can't just buy the skilled workforce anymore, because they want flexibility and they want stability and they want balance with life and they want purposeful work. These are the things I think that, you know, millennials so often get a bad rap about, they don't commit. Like, we can't mm-hmm. count on them. They don't stay anywhere. But guess what? I like to think of it as they aren't getting enough credit, because millennials mm-hmm. are much more willing to defend their boundaries and pursue purposeful work. And not settle for a job that sucks their soul for a dollar. You know? And I that conversation needs reframed on mm-hmm. a big scale. And it's like, okay, knowing that they're not leaving because they're uncommitted or they're not loyal. They're leaving because they want to pursue passion and purpose. And how do we then, knowing that, build that into our culture? Like, that would really help solve the turnover problem that companies are seeing across any industry. That just even having the awareness that, hey, you know, they're not leaving because they're flaky or entitled. They're leaving because they want to do work that matters, and you aren't giving them the opportunity to do that and have ownership there.
Yeah.
Or they're doing a bad job of actually showing how that job matters, because even in the Navy, you know, the janitors know that their job is important, because if they don't do their job right, then someone's going to trip up or not be able to get into their battle station, et cetera, and the boat sinks.
Yeah.
Right. It's tying purpose. Like, just expecting people to show up to work because they don't have any other options or they want money is not, that's not the motivation. That's not the driver anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think I have gotten some really amazing information and insight from Lindsay Picardo, who's an awesome coach and a speaker. And she's kind of known really for all intents and purposes around here as the Millennial Whisperer. Mm-hmm. She works with millennials, and then she also works with companies helping to hire and retain millennials and help fill that gap in. And she's provided some amazing perspective and just changing that conversation a little bit and reframing it. So, okay, companies, this is a problem you can solve. This is not a flaky, undedicated workforce. This is simply aligning purposeful work and purposeful messaging around work and jobs with people who need that purpose fulfillment to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And when you say it like that, it's like, oh yeah, totally simple. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's the awareness thing, and it's meeting the needs, whether it's a client or an employee or, whatever your relationship with a family member or a spouse, it's having tools to know what you're seeing and then feeling confident to meet those needs in a meaningful way.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'm going to take you on a little bit of a different path here. Sure. So I've seen that you, speaking of relationships, that you focus on the dating side of the house too. So how did that come about?
Yeah. So I launched Shiny Things. The Shiny Things with Lisa Mitchell podcast was just a passion project of mine because it was a perfect marriage of, pun intended.
Yeah, yeah.
a scientific skill set in the wild, wild west.
Sure. Yeah.
And there are few, work is important and careers are priority, but man, when it comes right down to it, people are people and they want other people. Like we have to be in relationship with people in some realm, and and having, intimate or romantic partners is one of the most treasured space. And there's lots of people seeking, and there's lots of frustration around that. And the rules have changed. It's a space that I have been in and out of for the last 8 years. Right. So I have kind of seen the evolution of traditional dating and online dating, websites versus apps and mentality shift and all of that stuff. So it's really just, it's me just, again, pulling back the curtain and sharing life a little bit. But I have, the great thing about it is it's just not me, lamenting about my experiences. I have access to all these experts and people that have written books and science-based dating strategies and evolutionary theories on how people choose mates or interact in relationships. So for me, it's like, how do I get smarter about this? And then how do I help other people? Because it's so much has changed, but so much hasn't.
Yeah.
When you compare the evolution through history of tribal relationships and, men historically then and now prefer youth and beauty, and women are looking for security and protection, like resources and protection. That has not changed despite women's lib, despite these societal and the construct changes, and the technology has not changed that at all. Like, that is still the driver. So it's interesting to see what's changed and what really still back from, our caveman ancestors is pretty much exactly the same.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's a funny coincidence, not that it's anything, but let me back up. It's a funny coincidence because my wife and I actually met on Match.com, gosh, 3-something years ago, and we recently got married, and we have two little girls, beautiful little girls together, which makes a blended family of 5 total kids. So, I've been through it too. I was divorced in 2011 and went through that time frame of when it was still like socially awkward to say that you met online. And now it's completely different shift of kind of like the commercials. If you're not on Match, what the hell's wrong with you kind of thing? Where have you been? So, yeah. So now it's totally shifted to where you, if you're not online, you're
you're losing out, missing out. So I'm curious how it is nowadays, now that it's, like I said, my wife and I met 3 years ago and I was her first date. So yeah.
Oh, she locked down quality right from the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah. I've just been lying to her ever since.
Yeah, well, the major changes that I've seen is that really, of course, everything has moved a lot from the traditional website to app-based. Mm-hmm. So it's even more of a fast food culture.
Oh, yeah.
The major trends that I've uncovered is that there is a false abundance mentality, mm-hmm. Which has led to people to an even greater reluctance to invest in a single person. So people are dating and are optimistic, but they have one foot out the door. And because why would I tolerate a flaw or an annoyance or you not meeting one of my standards? Why would I tolerate that or work through that when I can just right swipe and hope the next one's better?
Yeah.
Right. So it's created this huge environment of insecurity because you never know where else they are. If you're dating someone and it's going really well, it's like, okay, well, they took their profile down on Bumble, but are they on Match? Are they on Tinder? Are they on, where else are they? And how big of a bench are they sitting on right now? Like how many backup girls do they have on their shelf that if I disappoint at some point, somebody's going to get the call up. Yeah. And I say that in all seriousness.
Like, well, I believe you. Yeah.
Do it too. Girls do. I mm-hmm. honestly operate in that way most of the time. Mm. Like, you got your starters and then you got your bench, right? So if you need a plus one for something and your starter disappoints you or isn't what you thought they were, you call up a bench and there you go. And then you have to decide on the flip side of that because you pretty much know when you're on somebody's bench.
Yeah,
right? When somebody puts you on the shelf, you know the tone changes, the interaction changes, the frequency changes. And then, but there's a lot of people that for whatever reason are okay there. They know they're on the bench and they stay there. And I'm like, okay, well, that's a whole conversation around self-worth that we're not going to get into right now, but you are perpetuating, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. What have you found? You said you were working with some experts in the field. Yeah. You're bringing up some terrific points of, well, quite a few actually of being on the bench and some people are okay with that or being on the field or whatnot. And yeah, there's definitely some interesting social aspects to dating. That's a lot of things on people's shoulders this time in their life, in dating and work and maybe living in their parents' basement or not and how to get out. And it's a lot to juggle for the young professional. So what have you found from the professionals that have come across your path?
Yeah.
What's their guidance for this kind of stuff? Are we heading in a bad direction or?
I don't think so. I mean, just like your story, right? Like I can't tell you how many like Tinder weddings I've gone to or how many, you know? really.
They put it on the cake, did they?
and now like Tinder's more kind of a hookup app. So even the apps themselves, the perception of them and the functionality changes quickly. Like, one app can be, oh, this is where you go to meet quality people. And 6 months later, it's like, oh, yeah, that's totally just for hookups. Gosh, so it's even the same product shifts. The usage of it shifts. The intention around it shifts quickly, like very, very quickly. And so it's really kind of difficult. It looks like you should have an abundance of amazing options. But if you have any standards and any criteria at all, you realize quickly how much that's not really the case. And there's one scientist that I love. She's got a TED talk about it where she actually created an algorithm and built an entire spreadsheet of all of her inputs. And took like the number of people in her entire metropolitan area and did all of these scientific formulaic findings to actually get to. And it was like three, like out of a city. I think she was in Boston. By the time she really sliced and diced and got down to like what she really wanted, if she maintained her standards, there were like three guys out of like 350,000 that were actually really for her.
Yeah.
And so that was, it's kind of an exaggerated, you know, really comprehensive way to approach the the products, but it was just an illustration of if we really need to start valuing interactions, because it's not a limitless supply, and it's not, there's not always something better. Like, I call it FOBO. So many people operate in the dating space with fear of better offers.
Yeah.
So they don't want to ever, because why would I settle, or yeah, she's great or he's great, but man, if I just keep looking, if I just keep swiping right, if I just keep mindlessly dating, then I'll find the upgrade, right? Yeah. And it's just really, it's damaging and it's dysfunctional and it's, but it also, for people that are, you know, you mentioned juggling life, right? Like, for people that are trying to get out of their parents' basement and pay down student debt and get a job and have something meaningful. Like, there's a lot of days with the work that I do and my schedule, I don't even leave my house. So unless somebody's at Kroger, or I bump into them at the gas station, or they're at the library, you know, like, my circle, is very small. So it's like, if I want to meet someone, what do you do? Right. And I'm an educated professional adult, you know, grown up woman. And that's still, in many cases, the best option for connection. Yeah. So it's, you got to kind of figure out, how do you maneuver in that space and not lose your freaking mind?
Yeah.
Like, honestly, to be perfectly candid. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so I know a lot of, now a lot of video resumes are going out. Do you think that that's going to start going into the dating world too, a video, some kind of video resume sort of thing?
I think that should be the only way. Like, I think every dating app should force you to get on FaceTime or Skype, like, immediately. Like, people talk about getting catfished, or, oh, we met, they didn't look anything like their pictures. It's like, that's your own stupid fault. Like, with the technology that we have today, if you, like, because one of my friends, we were talking yesterday at the pool, she was telling me about this joker that she was talking to, that his name changed and there was just all sorts of shadiness. And she's like, I'm not even sure if that's who he really is. And I'm like, then just text them and say, hey, you know, go stand in front of a clock and take a selfie of yourself right now. You know, like, right now, do it, timestamp it today. So I know it's you. Like, there should never be a reason. If you get catfished now, it's because you're afraid to find the truth.
Right. Yeah.
Like, it shouldn't happen. But I think the next big trend in dating will be FaceTime or Skype or something where there's instant, which is kind of terrifying because you don't always want to be real time with somebody, but what's your intention, you know?
Right. Yeah. Talk about a first impression, man. Somebody starts calling you on Skype all of a sudden. Put a hat on.
Even having a phone call, call with people is under, like, there's a very divided school of thoughts on, do you talk on the phone before you meet? Is it weird if somebody calls you? Is it intrusive? I did one of the first podcasts I did for Shiny Things, we spent some time on the communication channel. Like, is it, when do you go off app and start texting direct? When do you, is it weird to get a phone call? Should you do a phone call? You know, and for me as a body language person, I'm like, hell yeah, do a phone call, because that at least gives you emotionality, tonality. Yeah, that gives you another dimension into the person that you're interacting with. And you can sort out tone of voice, and does something hit a button? Are they sensitive about something? Do they hesitate about something? Anybody can seem wickedly clever if they have 10 minutes to formulate a perfect text response. But how does that person work in real time? You know, it's a totally different dynamic. I think you're doing yourself a huge disservice if you don't have some sort of additional communication other than text or messaging before you get in somebody's space.
When you're making a great point too, and let's go back to the original point you made with the all of the 60-second pictures standing up against the wall, and you're already gaining this initial first impression of them before they even hit the stage. Same thing in the dating world, that if you're texting or emailing or something like that, like you said, there's maybe hours to plan out this email or this text. But how would you suggest, from your professional standpoint, that somebody in the dating world make that right first impression through phone call, or how would they go through that process where they're not blowing their first impression?
Yeah, well, I think digital first impressions are really important. And a lot of it is just understanding how people perceive you. So even everything, you know, from your, let's just take a profile picture and the angle of your body, if you're smiling, if you're fake smiling versus genuine smiling, where your eyes are engaged, where your hands are, if they can be seen, like what's in your background. You know, there was a thing at one point where guys, right? There were these guys that were going into IKEA and taking their like selfies or their profile pictures in these beautifully staged areas at Restoration Hardware or IKEA or wherever to create the perception that, oh, this is my house, right? To make them more appealing. Yeah. So, but that does create an impression. It's the ornament. It's that ornaments component, right? Mm-hmm. Not just how I'm showing up, but what's around me that conveys messages.
Right. Yeah.
And I do that too. Like if somebody takes a selfie in their bathroom, like I'm looking at what's on their counter, like what's like what kind of hair products do they use? And is there girl stuff? Right. Because a lot of
is there wife in the room?
And there's like makeup on the counter. And I'm like, okay, red flag probably.
Yeah.
Message you back, loser, because you forgot to stage your space. Right. So there's all of these, and I'm probably clearly like hyper aware and hyper observant of these little nuances. But man, when I say people will tell you everything you need to know about them, I'm not lying. Yeah. Like there's always people give themselves away all the time. So pay attention to the details, kids, because that's what will get you in trouble.
So what are you currently looking forward to in the not too distant future?
Yeah, no, I'm pretty pumped up. I have an online course coming out soon that will be the People Reading Playbook. That's going to give kind of way more actionable items and tips and tricks for people that want to kind of leverage these skills and to get ahead in business and in life. I have a book coming out that will be focused specifically on giving tools to millennial women to help them win. Again, kind of playbook structure to help them win as they're establishing their careers and following their purpose and just, you know, crafting that life that they're happy to walk into every day. Because I hate when people are stuck. And there's really some ways you can get clear and you can take action and you can start getting what you want now instead of having to course correct later when it's way more expensive and painful. So those are things, and I get to speak at a couple of cool places. I'm going to Tahoe and Vegas, and I love to speak. I love to give keynotes and work with management groups. So I'm everywhere, man. You can't get away from me right now on social media and launching a new show in conjunction with Edge Media Studios, and I'm excited about that. It's just my mission, my sole mission with my work is to help millions of people show up as their most confident, clued in selves. And I don't really care how that happens. I just want it to happen. So whatever it's TV show, book, you know, skywriting, I message on the beach with Fox. I don't care. Like however it happens, I'm good with it.
Yeah.
Cool. So, Leo, going into the rapid fire questions here, and it's been a couple of sessions since I've asked my favorite question. Who are three influencers or teachers that have launched you where you are today?
Ah, such a great question. Okay, so the first one is my friend and mentor, Vanessa Van Edwards. She's the chief behavioral investigator at Science of People. Mm-hmm. She basically taught me the tools that I needed to help impact the people I want to impact, which I'm forever grateful for her and her time and her expertise and her friendship. And just amazing. And then a second one would be Chalene Johnson.
Okay.
And Chalene Johnson is most commonly known for her workout programs for Turbo Kick and Pio. And you see her on infomercials all the time on TV. But she actually is an amazing businesswoman. And she has owned her own production studio. And she has really cracked the code in social media marketing. And had a course really during that time of transition when I left my corporate job to do my own consulting. She really helped me get crystal clear on exactly what I wanted, and had some great resources and a great community of support to just help figure out where your highest point of impact is and then how do you get there. So I really appreciate her friendship and expertise and, and then probably another one that's been really helpful as far as just opening up new people that I need to know stuff about has been Lewis Howes. He has the School of Greatness podcast. I've actually had the opportunity to meet Lewis and kind of met his mom. She's awesome. She's got a great story. She's really the powerhouse. Don't let him fool you. but I've just been really fortunate to connect with some people that are really just passionate about helping other people and coming at everything with a servant heart attitude. And that's what I try to emulate and try to pay forward also, is to how can I be of service? How can I fill a need that you have? How can I help make a connection for you? You know, because I have seen the law of reciprocity at work so strongly in my life that I know the easiest way to get the things that you need is to help other people get what they need. And then it just shows up for you. So that's kind of how I try to do my business and operate in the space of relationships, and just always kind of go with a service first mindset.
Good deal. Wow.
Pretty good.
What is the hardest thing you've ever had to say no to?
Amazing opportunity. An opportunity that looked like it could scale me and launch me super fast, but was not philosophically something I could sustain for the long term.
And of course, that was, again, after you realized it was better to base your choices based on your business and where you see it versus just taking all the opportunities you could.
Exactly. I'm a big fan of the practice of essentialism. Mm-hmm. Greg McKeon wrote the book Essentialism, and I read it at a time in my life where I really, that was when I was saying yes to everything. And it depleted my energy, and I was having very little impact anywhere. Because I was spread too thin. And so really being okay. And it was like I needed someone to give me permission to say no. And to honor my own priorities over doing what other people wanted me to do. And it's so hard to say no to good things, you know, to things that are going to help people and things that really have a great point of impact, but they're just not the right thing for you. It's just, it's so hard to say no, because I'm a people pleaser. I want people to like me. I don't ever want to disappoint. I'm very much like a I can fix it kind of person. But that, again, there's only energy is a finite resource, and you have to protect your energy if you're really going to be able to show up and have the biggest point of impact in your own life. You got to be a little selfish sometimes, and it's for the greater good, but it's painful in that moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because you feel like you're letting people down.
What would you say is your least favorite social custom?
Ghosting. The process of ghosting.
Yeah.
I just think that the fact that it's okay in our society to just completely render someone irrelevant and unvaluable is, it's devastating, and it's rude, and it's damaging, and it's horrible, and it's unacceptable. Like, the fact that we allow society to like joke about the act of ghosting is, it's a real tragedy. Because it does a lot of damage, and people who are not strong in their worth and their value, they take assigned value from how other people treat them. And when you ghost someone that does not have a worthy foundation, you're telling them they're worth nothing. And that can do irreparable damage. You know, we're seeing it with increased suicides, and we're seeing it with, you know, people really, we live in a society where we want the dopamine hit. We want the likes, we want the shares, we want the comments. That's our validation system.
Right.
And when you take it in the realm of interpersonal relationships or intimate relationships, to go ghost on somebody is sending a very strong message that some people are not equipped to receive.
Yeah.
I would challenge people before they ghost, before they just cut somebody off and act like they don't exist and they're not a worthy human being, to think about, would you be okay if the worst case scenario happened from your action?
See, I wasn't even aware of what you were even talking about, but at least you told me there at the end, because I had no, I was like, what are we talking about again? But I can see definitely now that you described it, how that would definitely be an issue for sure.
Yeah. I have big philosophical problems with ghosting.
Yeah, that was a deep one. Wow. Well, you know what? And actually, this is a good tie-in question too. So I know you and I are both parents of 11-year-olds, and I have several girls of my own, and I know you have a daughter, 11-year-old daughter. So what kind of advice have you heard adults giving children or young adults, I guess, that you would call BS on these days?
My head wants to explode when I hear someone say that's not for you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, oh, well, that's, you know, you're not, art really isn't your strong, like art really isn't your talent, or, you know, Matt, you're just not good at math, or you're always going to do better at No. You do not get to decide what someone's passion is. You do not get to decide. Like, yes, there's grades in school and there's measurements, and I can't even get into that because we do not have time to unpack my philosophy on that.
Mm-hmm.
But for to hear someone say, "Oh, well, you know, that's you're better suited for X or Y." Like the intentions are good. The intentions are good, but you tell, like, that's how we kill creativity in our culture. Mm-hmm. By the time a child is the age of our kids. They've already been told what's for them and what's not for them.
Oh, right? Yeah, certainly. Yeah.
And how damaging is that?
Mm.
You know, there's all sorts of studies about how many times we laugh in the course of the day. And children laugh hundreds of times throughout the day. And as adults, we laugh like 18 times, maybe, on a good day. Right? And so where does that joy go?
Yeah.
Because we learn what we're not allowed to be joyful about.
Yeah. Huh.
And it sucks. That's my biggest thing, man. Do not be a dream killer. Mm-hmm. That is not okay. Yeah. Right? Kids are very smart. They'll naturally figure out and filter out what's well suited for them and what's not. They don't need you to tell them what direction you want them to go in.
Yeah. You
know? Wow.
Yeah,
that's a good one too. I can reflect on some of the things that I was told that I wasn't capable of doing. And well, kind of stunned me for a bit, but now I'm doing them. So there you go.
Well, see, that's the thing.
But
that's a perfect illustration of the long-term harm, right? Because our minds create these rules and constructs when we're children because of the environments and its survival mechanism, right? It's the rules of our family and the rules of our school and the rules we learn how to get through each day. But then what we don't ever learn is as adults, when the rules have changed and our environments have changed and our context has changed, how do we update our mental software? How do we, the rules we used to have to play by no longer serve us, but you know what? If you don't actively change those scripts in your head, you play by those same rules even as adults.
Yeah.
And all those limiting beliefs like still run and they do not serve you in the new areas of your life. And so many people get stuck there and never get out of the rule, the construct and the rules from their childhood.
Man, you got my head spinning over here.
I know, man.
There's a lot of stuff I'd like to say, but I'm not going to.
Right. I know. The program's only so long.
Yeah exactly.
Part two. We'll just make an anthology, right? Just keep going.
There you go. How can someone be a difference maker in their community?
Yeah, difference makers. So I believe, again, I mentioned it earlier about coming from a place of servant leadership. The quickest way to make a difference is to find out what the needs are and then do what you can with what you have to fill those needs.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's making an introduction, whether it's listening to someone and providing counsel, you know, whether it's showing up for someone who maybe doesn't have someone else to show up for them. It's an investment. You know, people will throw money at causes and they'll share and like on social media and think they're being helpful or a solution or proactive, but it's really getting in the physical space with people when they need you there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a sacrifice, right? We only have so much time. So you have to make that physical sacrifice to show up for somebody, but showing up for somebody is how you change the world.
Awesome.
Is physically being in their space.
And finally, as we're wrapping up today, if someone wants to start improving their confidence in life and everything that they're doing and in social situations in particular, what are some steps that they can start doing today to make that happen?
one of the things I think is really effective for people and helping to boost their confidence and give them some direction, especially in those first, you know, I hate walking into a room where I don't know anybody. Like, I'll pull into events, and if I'm not meeting somebody there that I know is already there, like, I don't want to get out of my car. Like, I hate it, right? And I have all these skills, and I know the science, and I should be better than this, but I'm also human, right?
Oh, you're a human? Oh, man.
I know.
Is.
I know. Someday I'll be a full-fledged fembot, but I'm not there just yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but for me, what helps me is to think about, and the question I challenge the groups when I train them with is, if someone were to talk to you for 1 minute and you leave and someone comes up and asks them, oh, you know, what, how would you describe that person in 3 words? What 3 words would you hope that person would use to describe you with? So most people in corporate settings is like, oh, confident, trustworthy, competent, warm, friendly, engaging, you know, all the words you would hope for. So if you think of your 3 words, like land on 3 that you really like and would hope you would leave, and think before you walk in the door, before you get out of your car, I am going to be X, Y, and Z in this room.
Mm-hmm.
Just a quick little mental check-in, and to set, it's really setting an intention.
Mm-hmm.
It's deciding how you want to show up in that space. That just having that moment of clarity and knowing confidently that that's who you're showing up as, it gives you an air of confidence, and that kind of creates this positive halo effect, and people will notice that you know why you're there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Awesome. And what's the best place to for people to connect with you or find you on social media if they need help?
Yeah, well, people really can't get away from me right now because I'm kind of obnoxious and everywhere. But the best place to get me directly is at my website. It's powerbodylanguage.com. And there is a place to contact me there, or they can email me directly, lisa@powerbodylanguage.com. They can find me on Instagram if you want some random behind-the-scenes Instagram stories, @thepeoplereader. And then on Twitter, it's a crapshoot what you're going to get from me on Twitter. But it's Lisa Mitch and then the letter L. So LisaMitchL.
Gotcha.
On Twitter.
Nice. All right.
Yeah. Some Australian pop star has my, like, all my social real estate locked up.
Damn them.
All right. I know.
All right. Well, Lisa, thank you so much for joining us today. It was definitely a pleasure and got a lot out of it. Wow. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the invite. I'd love to be on with you guys today. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks.
Well, there you have it, guys. Hope you enjoyed that one with Lisa. Lots of great insight there on how we can present ourselves better. Be sure to check out the show note extras where I'll be sharing some of her appearances on local TV as well as, you know, some of her own videos, which can be found at show notes via newinceptions.com/105. Now, the first one is all about how you can be a human lie detector. You know, she says if you know body language science, you can actually be 90% accurate in detecting deception. Next up, we have a couple of videos where she discusses how you can own the room. Because here's the thing, really. When you walk into a room, you want to make sure that you're giving off a friendly vibe. You don't want to give off a vibe of you being a threat, right? Or, you know, just simply being neutral and part of the background. You want to give off a friendly vibe. And she has a couple of videos on how you can actually do that. And then I have a couple of videos from her YouTube channel, and one she's talking about how you can avoid what is called the question inflection. Personally, I refer to it as the Valley Girl syndrome. But it's when someone always does this at the end of their sentences. I mean, really? So great video if, you know, this is something that you might do on a regular basis, because she kind of does a little bit of a exercise there to help you get over that. And then the last one I have of Lisa is a pretty interesting one where she's talking about LeBron James and what his post-shot behavior means. he kind of does a little nose thing there. And pretty interesting if you're into sports. And I'm, you know, curious about whether or not NFL players have actions like this too, because I don't necessarily pick up on them. Maybe I'm thinking that maybe quarterbacks, what they'll do is they'll kind of rub their hands on their towel. So yeah, you can be sure that I'll be looking around for more of that kind of behavior. Really good content there that I think you guys are going to get a lot of pointers from. And then, you know, there's plenty more of her on the web. All you have to do is Google her. So that being said, let's move on to the big announcement. Big announcement is, you know, Lisa said something in this session that really struck a chord with me. And, you know, she said, energy is a finite resource and you have to make sure you have the energy to have the greatest impact in your own life. And you have to be a little selfish sometimes. It's for the greater good, but it's painful in that moment. You'll feel like you're letting people down. And so here's the thing, gang. Last week, after finishing off session 104 with JR, I realized that him and Arnie both had short-lived podcasts of their own. And now, you know what they're doing? Hosting Facebook groups pretty much full-time and doing really well with their businesses. You know, honestly, between Facebook and LinkedIn, groups are a great way to build a following, and a following that I haven't quite developed yet after 2 years of doing the podcast each and every week. I haven't really been able to get much else done, and I think it's time to try a different and up-to-date tactic. Because frankly, what worked for Pat and all the other different podcasts that we all know about, I don't see it working quite in the same way, and especially for us solopreneurs who are doing all the work. There's only so many hours in a day. So instead of a podcast every week, I'm going to try every other week for a bit. That will free me up to do other things in the off weeks, including finding time to actually work on the upcoming group and or building those small businesses sales funnels that I've kept on talking about recently. And while my dream is to develop a network of like-minded people talking about the world of entrepreneurship, creativity, and other good things in life, that's not going to happen with me so close to the ground. I need to get a bit higher up. So I'm thinking about putting additional time into the Facebook group will help this, and maybe some of the early followers, maybe I'll give them a little bit of room and they can start developing their own shows and getting their own exposure through the network, so to speak. So next week, guys, don't expect another episode. Instead, make sure you're tuned in to the New Inceptions page. Like I said at the beginning of the podcast, hope to have the new group up and going by next Thursday, testing it out with a few of you, and then I'll be posting a link on the page. You know, currently I'm running with the idea of making it business-oriented. Sure, you know, that's what podcast and what New Inceptions is all about. But I think it's going to be leaning more on the School of Greatness side of things, more so than on the other groups that are out there. You know, more mindset, less tactics. So that being said, guys, session 105 is in the bag. Next time in session 106, which will be out 2 weeks from now, I'll be doing a solo interview with Mark Boersma, president of Synergy Solutions. And I feel it's a good follow-up to this session because we talk about a course of his called Personality Masteries. And, you know, I've talked about in the blog how personalities are huge with me. Well, let's just say that through Personality Masteries, I've actually been able to learn a skill that makes determining someone's personality very, very simple. So we'll be talking to Mark about that program of his, and also why he's super big in having business systems. So I hope you guys join me next time with Mark. Again, to make sure that you're informed when the session is published, all you have to do is like the New Inceptions page on Facebook, and then underneath the following tab, just select See First. So guys, that's it for session 105. And again, remember to get your free month trial of Read It For Me by visiting newinceptions.com/readitforme. And that said, thanks for joining myself, Albert, and Lisa in this chat. Until next time, gang, dig in, have fun. Take care in whatever you're creating, and we'll see you back here next time.
Thanks for listening to the Angles of Latitude podcast. Connect with us at home, at work, or on the go at facebook.com/newinceptions, on Twitter at newinceptions, Instagram at new.inceptions, and on the web at newinceptions.com.